Talk Show.
Recorded live.
And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Fellow Adamites, we are seeing the cracks emerge in Babylon. We are seeing the cracks spread. I don't believe it will be too long now before we hear Babylon the Great is fallen. And Yahweh willing, we shall all be there to witness it, and all the world shall bear witness to the power of Yahweh. If you have not begun to prepare for the things which are to come, the things which you are already starting to see happen, then you had best do so now. Now is the time to make preparations, gather supplies, make plans, and focus your efforts to keep on the straight and narrow path. Be right with the Heavenly Father, and he shall bring you through the plagues that await this doomed nation. Today is April 4th, 2010, Sunday, and Bill Fink is joining us for the third installment of Goebbels, Communism with the Mask Off. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Hello. Praise Yahweh.
Absolutely. Praise Yahweh. And please don't wish me a happy Ishtar.
Yeah.
Seems everybody's been wishing me a happy Ishtar lately.
That's, I don't know. People don't realize how pagan our culture is.
And they celebrate it with ham.
That's a great way to commemorate the sacrifice of Yahshua on the cross. It is a big slice of pig's ass. That's the way to do that.
People ask me about ham and pork, I say that, well, you can see what Yahweh and Yeshua thought of pork and pigs when he drove the demons into the swine. He picked the swine for a reason. It was to send a message, to let people know this is how filthy pigs are. That's what
Actually,
I think, anyway.
It was the demons that chose the swine.
Well, yeah, the demons said, cast us into the swine, but he did, and then he drove them down the cliff, didn't he?
Yes, the swine drove down the embankment and over into the sea.
That was the legion, right? The demons that identified themselves as legion and said, for we are many?
Yes, it was. Yes,
all right.
And now they're all on Madison Avenue and Wall Street.
All right.
Same legion, I swear. they could be identified in archaeology. Okay.
Would you like to start us off? We left off, I believe, on page 26.
We've been seeing here in Goebbels' speech, Communism with the Mask Off, we've been seeing how communist uprisings after the Bolshevik Revolution in the 20s and 30s, all over Europe and Asia, and even in Cuba and the Philippines, which were American territories at the time, and there were communist uprisings in Cuba and the Philippines in the 30s, were all inspired and led by Jews. Goebbels has been documenting these claims and naming names with specific details. We have heard of radical communist uprisings even in China, where over a million people were slain for it in a single province, Kianxi. And 6 million more were deprived of their property. That's on page 12 of the copy of Goebbels' speech that's available at the Mein Kampf website. The Soviet Republic of Bavaria was short-lived, but it existed in Munich in 1919. That's on page 25 of Goebbels' speech.
Should we
How did America not know about these things? Yeah, you know, how did, you know, here we will see here that Goebbels, and on the next page, I think, page 27 maybe, well it's coming soon, he cites the British-Russian number one report towards the end of his speech, and we're about to get to that. And you can bet that if Goebbels knew about the British-Russian number one report, which we read here on his program, that America had to know about it.
Absolutely.
And
the Americans had their own version of the report.
Right. And still the press promoted and the people coddled the notion of Uncle Joe Stalin, who was perhaps the world's most murderous man. In fact, as the American press was embracing him, he was basically responsible for the deaths of millions of Ukrainians and of all those Chinese for the promotion of communism.
Can we summarize what the Bavarian Soviet Republic was for those that aren't aware and how it was put down?
My guess.
Well, basically, the communists rose up in Bavaria. They overthrew the prince in Bavaria, who I believe had been against the Kaiser, ironically, and had been instrumental in getting the Kaiser booted out. And had it not been for the intervention of the Freikorps, German veterans that had not disarmed and demobilized, they simply returned home from the front and continued staying in their units. Had it not been for the intervention of the Freikorps, the Bavarian Soviet Republic would likely have precipitated a Marxist revolution all across Germany. It would have been the springboard for launching Marxism all across Germany. Do you have any doubt about that, sir?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And that's, you know,
that
entirely inspired entirely through the people who practiced Judaism.
And look at the name they chose, Bavarian Soviet Republic. They had no connection to Germany.
Well, no, there's no secret at all.
There's no secret at all that
these communist uprisings in Germany came out of the Soviet Union, were Jewish in nature.
Well, you know, Mussolini was a socialist for a time until he realized that socialism had no love for the nation, that it was a ruthless internationalist movement that would sell out Italy for the sake of the Soviet International, the Communist International. He said that when the socialists tried to sabotage the Italian war effort in World War I, that was the final straw for him. And that's absolutely true, isn't it? There's no such thing as a nationalist communist movement. Communism hates nationalism.
No, and we'll see that later on tonight in my notes from Mein Kampf.
All right.
Yeah, I have a couple other things I'd like to present before we get into this.
Certainly.
Russians may hang portraits of Stalin for World War II celebration. That is one article that's available on the internet, and that's from the Detroit Free Press. That there isn't much of a Detroit left because of the communist agenda, but they still have a newspaper, and they have a lot of nerve calling it the Detroit Free Press.
Well, you know, they recently did a survey in Russia. I believe Stalin was the second or third most popular Russian of all time. He's not even a Russian, though. First was Alexander Nevsky, the race traitor piece of filth that he was, and the second was Old Uncle Joe.
Well, right, and Old Uncle Joe is not a Russian. He's an Armenian Jew, and he was only Russia by the fact that the Tsars held that territory.
Wasn't he from Georgia, though?
Yes, he was from Georgia. It has recently been reported in various newspapers and on various websites that the Russians were once again raising monuments to Joseph Stalin. Now, not all of the comments from Russians were positive, but many of them were. An astounding number of them were. Here's an interesting one. Yeah, you know, people tend to think that the thought patterns of others are like our own, but that's not true at all. The Specter of Stalin, Press Review, November 2009. Alexander Prokhorov, editor-in-chief of the Zavtra newspaper. So he's an influential man. He's an editor-in-chief of a newspaper, right? And I quote, "Stalin should be sent back to the Kremlin. He received so much attention from our people because they have no interest in today's leaders. In the absence of strong, intelligent, and decisive politicians, Russians instinctively look toward the past when the country was great and her leaders were genuine fathers of their people. Stalin is the first among them." This is a contemporary newspaper editor in Russia. And Stalin was probably responsible for the deaths of 20 or 30 million people. It's absolutely incredible that anybody would openly have this attitude today.
Right, they're not naming high schools after him. You know, you've heard of the Negro Paul Robeson, right, that sang the most famous and well-known English version of the Soviet anthem?
Well, right, but, you know, here in America, we name a high school after just about any Negro that can read, because that was a major accomplishment.
Well, this American Negro went to the Soviet Union, was buddy-buddy with Stalin, and he was there while a community of American communists, many of them black, who had defected to the Soviet Union were being purged. And they were passing him notes begging that he get word to the American embassy and that he try and get them out. And he reported them to Stalin, and he continued to deny that there were any purges going on when he came back to the West. He said that Stalin was running a tight ship and the Soviet Union was a land of peace and plenty, while people of his own race were being taken off to the gulags, and certainly white communists that he didn't care about because they were white were being killed left and right. But that's what useful idiots get, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. And Frenchman in a Forum says that Walter Duranty witnessed the starvation of Ukraine and knew of the mass murders. And surely they did. A lot of the American press did. and we were lied about Stalin. And there's only one possible motivation for it, and that's that this is an open Jewish conspiracy against the white race. There's no doubt in my mind. That's exactly what happened, and it's still going on.
And it's pretty much in broad daylight.
And the only people that can't see it are the victims. It's absolutely incredible. All right, now here's something that this one's really nuts, and this goes to show the lengths that the enemy will go to cover its tracks. And I'm going to read something that's really wacky, but there's a lot of this stuff out there, and it is well funded, and a lot of people get caught up with this crap, and I just got to read it. It's from the Canadian national newspaper Exopolitics headlines. Headlines, news on democracy, ecology, and extraterrestrial research. Totalitarian communism linked to manipulative extraterrestrials.
You're kidding.
Now this is written by, it's only two paragraphs, I got to read it. This is, this is Bezmenov. This is classic Bezmenov, right? It's by a guy that calls himself Dr. John Singh. Now, Singh, S-I-N-G-H, is, an Indian name, so he's some sort of mamzer, right?
This is what Bezmenov would say is just false flag opposition to make people look crazy.
Oh, absolutely. Let me read this. Gary Zeitlin documents in OpenSETI.org that the manipulative extraterrestrials use the counterfeit spirituality of religion. So that's a Jewish attack on religion, right? And the alienated context of materialistic secularism to keep humanity corralled into a certain plane of thought that complements the agenda of regressive, and that might be a typo for repressive, aliens. The application of that logic suggests that totalitarian communism may have been orchestrated not to compete against Western capitalism, but in the long run to reinforce Western capitalism. Now we'll see that's true. And that line right there, and a new world order agenda. This may sound crazy until one critically reads research on techniques of mind control documented by Gary Zeitlin and other investigative researchers. Indeed, elites working with a leader like Joseph Stalin, who rose to the pinnacle of Soviet power, are responsible for the barbaric killing of over 20 million people of the Soviet Empire. John Lash's research on the Gnostics suggests that manipulative extraterrestrials called archons, as Trojan horses, seek to infiltrate human institutions. David Icke's testimony inspires consideration on whether signs of activity that is voided on basic human decency do not suggest the work of an alien intruder operating in a mimicked human form using the simple technology of virtual reality.
Simple technology of virtual reality? This Icky guy, I've read some of his stuff, and he talks about reptilians, and he's out there.
Oh, right, he's out there, but he's out there for a reason. This is all orchestrated. And and this clown, John Singh, this is all orchestrated. And if you take alien, extraterrestrial, and all those other related terms, and you substitute Jew, then it's perfectly true.
It makes sense, but if you present it as aliens, lizards, in human form, and then talk about the New World Order, you look like a quack that needs to be on Thorazine.
Well, absolutely, but if you understand it was Jews behind the Soviet Empire, it was Jews behind the Gnostics in Alexandria, 2nd century AD. And every revolutionary movement against the white race and white nationhood that's ever happened.
Well, they would claim that those are popular peasants' uprisings, but Yuri Bezmenov, KGB defector, whose video interview is available on your website, he said, quote, "There is no such thing as a popular uprising, that all revolutions are planned by a few elite individuals carefully behind the scenes. And they're financed by agencies such as the KGB, the NKVD, and the GRU, or their various front foundations."
Well, it's absolutely obvious to me that Icke and Sitchin and this guy here and Zeitlin and all these other turkeys, they're all exactly what Bezmenov describes.
Idiots that are out there to distract and discredit. seems like Ikey is the conspiracy equivalent of Klassen in terms of religion.
That well, Klassen absolutely, and Klassen was another one.
Klassen was out there to tear down religion. Ikey's out there to tear down legitimate conspiracy theories with bogus ones.
And Velikovsky, the insurance salesman turned astrophysicist.
So I can explain the Jewish problem to most people and point out the Jews. Then at the end of it, if I were to tell them that, oh, by the way, those are all reptilians in human form, everything I just told them, all the progress I made, that goes right out the window.
Okay. We could, I have one more article that was out of place, and it's about Russians hanging posters, portraits of Stalin for World War II celebration.
Contemporary?
This is in May, this coming World War II celebration that the Russians are going to hold. And it's being rumored, and it's in articles on the Internet, that among other celebration changes, a contingent of U.S. troops is expected to march in Red Square.
What year was this?
This is this year. This is this May coming up.
Why are U.S. soldiers marching in Red Square?
Well, to help the Russians and celebrate Joseph Stalin and the defeat of the evil Nazis.
Old Uncle Joe, our ally.
It's absolutely incredible. So we're still embracing communism.
And
it shows you who runs the country.
Did you know there's a band? Oh, sorry, go on.
To me, it's just absolute proof that Satan, meaning the Jew, runs this country as well as Soviet Russia.
And Obama hired a band during his campaign trail called the Decembrists. And at the start of each of their concerts, they play the old Soviet anthem with all the references to Stalin. It's not the new watered-down one. They would actually open each concert with the Soviet anthem. And he hired them as his, quote, campaign band.
Interesting. That's not a mistake either, huh?
You would think that they would vet a band like that. Imagine if a major candidate hired a band and they opened each concert with, you know, Diefenbachhoke.
Okay, you're going to start reading the rest of the speech.
All right. We left off on the bottom of 26?
Yes.
In the beginning of August 1917, the 6th Congress of the Bolshevik Party was opened. The presiding committee was made up of 3 Russians, 6 Jews, and 1 Georgian. On the 23rd October 1917, the historic session of ZK, Central Committee, was held. Here, the armed revolt was decided upon. For the purpose of taking over the leadership of the revolt, a political bureau, Politburo, and a war revolutionary center were established. These political and military centers of the Bolshevik Revolution were made up of 2 Russians, 6 Jews, 1 Georgian, and 1 Pole. And I would say that probably just means that they didn't know the Pole was a Jew and they couldn't prove the Russians were a Jew, but I'm sure they were all Jews, just from different geographical regions. In the English, collection of reports on Bolshevism in Russia, which was presented to Parliament in April 1919 by command of His Majesty, report number 6 contains the following. A telegram from Sir M. Finlay to Mr. Balfour, received on 18 September 1918. Following is report by Netherlands Minister at Petrograd, 6 September, received here today on the situation in Russia, in particular as affecting British subjects and British interests under Minister's protection. Continuing on, quote, at Moscow, I had repeated interviews with Chicherin and Karahan. Whole Soviet government has sunk to the level of a criminal organization. Bolsheviks realize their game is up and have entered upon a career of criminal madness. Continuing on, the danger is now so great that I feel it my duty to call the attention of the British and all other governments to the fact that if an end is not put to the Bolshevism in Russia at once, the civilization of the whole world will be threatened. I consider that the immediate suppression of Bolshevism is the greatest issue now before the world, not even excluding the war, which is still raging, and unless, as above stated, Bolshevism is nipped in the bud immediately, it is bound to spread in one form or another over Europe and the whole world, as it is organized and worked by Jews who have no nationality and whose one object is to destroy for their own ends the existing order of things. The only manner in which this danger could be averted would be collective action on the part of all powers. End quote. So we've read that time and time again, and here Goebbels is referencing it. So clearly Goebbels had a copy of Russia number 1.
And John Singh says this is manipulative extraterrestrials behind this.
I think it's Jews.
It's just too good. It's too good because there was war in space, and and Michael and his angels fought the devil and his angels. And it all sounds crazy, but if they only, it's like they purposely are leading people away from the truth and unwittingly possibly leaving them open to the truth at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's very odd. It's very strange.
Well, they show them all the symptoms, but they don't explain the cause.
Well, they don't name the cause straight out, and they sound like nuts.
Mm-hmm.
It's a face designed to alienate people, I believe.
Absolutely. On the 13th November 1934, the newspaper The Moment, which is brought out at Warsaw and is one of the Eastern Europeans' leading Jewish journals, published an article, number 260B, which was entitled Lazar Mosejewicz Kogonovitz, Stalin's deputy and right-hand man. The article states, he is a great man, this Lazar Mosejewicz. He will one day rule over the country of the Tsars. His daughter, who will soon be 21, is now Stalin's wife, and he is good to the Jews. Lazar Mosejewicz, you see, it is good to have a man in one of the key positions. Of the most authoritative functionaries from the party and the state in the highest councils of the USSR, we find that more than 20 are Jews and only 17 Russians, whereas the percentage of Jews to the whole population of the USSR is only 1.8%. And maybe just a cute coincidence, in the U.S., Jews are about 1 to 2% of the population, but somewhere around 52% of all high-ranking corporate executives. Isn't that just a cute coincidence?
Well, right, because they are a crime gang, and they put each other in positions where they could perpetuate that. And we don't understand that.
You know, it seems that they just walk into a company, say, you know, oh, Yvay, Herschel, my name is Moshe, I'm your third cousin from Haifa, we've never met, and the next thing you know, someone's a CEO, or he's at least sitting on the board. Whereas me, you know, I go there with a good resume, and they say, hey, you can start as an entry-level nobody.
That there's no doubt in my mind that it was the Jewish takeover of our economy, basically, in the Federal Reserve in 1913. That empowered the Jew to take over all American industry. And he did it. And we don't see it. Well, we don't see it because it looks so legitimate.
Mm-hmm. But they're grabbing up everything, finance, industry.
Well, they grabbed it all up. I mean, they grabbed it all up 80 years ago and during the Depression.
So at the end of World War II, the Jews thoroughly dominated this country lock, stock, and barrel.
Absolutely. And now they've moved it over to China, lock, stock, and barrel.
They just didn't have the mass media capability at the time to totally brainwash the nation. They were doing it through cinema, but that was limited. That had limited reach. Now they can broadcast their filth directly into your living room.
Well, they've been doing that for 50 years, yes.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it took basically, what, a decade to 15 years after the advent of TV, mass-produced televisions, for them to basically win the culture war.
Well, right, the sexual revolution, the feminist revolution.
And it's not for nothing that TV never appeared in South Africa until the early 70s. By the mid-80s, a lot of people were okay with the, quote, removal of the petty apartheid laws, the swimming pool regulations, miscegenation, cohabitation. And once you've done that, there is no more apartheid anymore. If a black is free to marry a white, you can't claim to have an apartheid society.
No. The only successful apartheid society today in the world is in Israel.
Hmm.
I wonder why.
That's because Jews can do whatever they want. They're the chosen.
Jews can do whatever they want as long as nobody else does it. That's exactly right. It's absolute hypocrisy.
All right. The People's Commissary for the Interior, formerly Cheka or OGPU, is the Jew Yagoda. In the Communist International, the General Staff of the World Revolution, the Jew Poyansky plays the most important role. And just as a side note, Stalin later had Genrikh Yagoda executed. And from what I read, Yagoda pleaded, cried, and tried to point out all the good work he had done in massacring dissidents and purging people and using forced labor to build canals for Stalin. And Stalin had him shot anyway. But just like a typical Jew, the cry and beg for mercy, whereas he gave none. The leadership of the Bolshevik revolutionary movement in all countries lay and still lies in Jewish hands. In some countries, such as Poland and Hungary, They are in exclusive control of this movement. In the trial against the Jewish communist Schmelze in March 1935, the Polish police commissioner Landerbursky declared as witness that 98% of those arrested in Poland on charges of communistic intrigues were Jews. The actual leader in the movement of the Bolshevization of China is the Jew Borodin Grusenberg. Now that sounds like a typical Chinese name to me. What do you think, Bill?
I don't even know why the Chinese let him into China with a name like that.
Well, I'm guessing he just came on in and they had no way to prevent him since China's such a vast country and it was pretty much lawless back then.
It to be lawless, but I mean, local chieftains held a great amount of sway over much of the country, mm-hmm. from what I understand. And the British were always buying them off.
That's why they had to bring Mao into the picture.
Well, right. They needed somebody as ruthless as Stalin.
Therewith, we may close the account. That is communism with the mask off. That is its theory, its practice, and its propaganda. I have given a bald and staid account of facts which have been gathered mostly from official sources. But this account points to a state of affairs which is so terrible and revolting in all its effects that it must shock the average civilized human being. And I'm sure if Americans knew this, they would have been shocked. That's why the Jews had to work overtime to keep Americans from realizing this.
Right. Our media just had a total love affair with communism because mm-hmm. our media was dominated by Jews and did everything they could to portray it as nice a picture of Bolshevik Russia as possible.
You know, in Rhodesia, the communists during the Bush War, they shot down several Rhodesian civilian airliners. And at one, there were still 15 or 20 survivors in the wreckage. They descended on the scene, they raped the women, and then chopped them up with machetes. If white soldiers had even summarily executed black terrorists, the media would have been all over it, calling the Rhodesians racist. But no mention of this airplane attack was made outside of Rhodesia, South Africa, and I think Portugal, which were basically Rhodesia's allies. So they decide what we're, you know, what knowledge we are privy to, what we're exposed to. Entire things just, we never know. We'll never know about all the massacres in Belgian Congo. We may never know of the nameless tens of thousands killed in all across Africa.
We don't know about the black-on-white crime right in our own country that's mm-hmm. constant. The 100 white women a day that are raped by Negroes, that's constant. And it's right under our noses.
You know, I once told my dad that if the media reported every black-on-white crime, they would have no time for anything else. They would be just continuously black-on-white crime. Would you tend to agree?
It would eat up all the time that they usually spend on Paris Hilton. We'd never know anything about Paris Hilton.
What a loss.
And the rest of those pigs.
This gospel of the emancipation of the proletariat from the yoke of capitalism is the worst and most brutal kind of capitalism that can be imagined. It has been thought out, set afoot, and led under the inspiration of the mammon worship and materialist thought which is incarnated in international Jewry scattered throughout every country of the globe. It is no social experiment. It is nothing else than a mammoth system for the expropriation and despoiling of the Aryan directive classes in all the nations and the substitution of the Jewish underworld in their place. And that's exactly what happened. They got the Aryan peoples throughout the world to gut their own cultures and nations, and thus allowing a power vacuum to be created, which the Jews immediately filled.
By perfecting the propaganda. Liberty, mm-hmm. egalite, fraternite.
Absolutely. The Jews didn't win a war with bullets and bombs. They won a war with propaganda and culture. You'll never see a million Jews taking to the field to go conquer Serbia. They'll use propaganda, and then they'll set NATO off to do it.
Well, without the money power, they wouldn't have been able to do any of it.
Absolutely, but that's why they own all the central banks. And if a country will not allow a Jewish central bank, they're pretty soon going to be the target of a propaganda campaign and then a coalition attack. You know, if Germany says no to the central bank, all of a sudden France and Russia are mobilized against it. Those people who put themselves forward here as the apostles of a new teaching and the liberators of mankind are in reality figures that herald anarchy and chaos for the civilized world. Well, we're told the leaven of the Pharisees is hypocrisy. There is no longer any political question at issue here. This thing cannot be judged or estimated by political rules or principles. It is iniquity under a political mask. It is not something to be brought before the bar of world history, but rather something that has to be dealt with by the judicial administration of each country. It must be met with the same ruthless and even brutal means with which it strives to usurp power or hold power in its hands. And I think that's the only thing the Jews understand. That's why they were defeated in Germany and defeated in Spain. The Germans didn't just say, our ideals are better than yours, peace, love, and brotherhood, and fair play for all. The Freikorps said, get the hell out of Germany or we're going to chop your head off. And in some instances, that's exactly what they did. And in Spain, Franco said, no, we're not going to stand for communism. We're going to oppose it. He didn't sit around and try and debate about the merits of a free enterprise Christian civilization. When the communists reared their ugly head, he smashed it. Here,
and those men were heroes for that reason. And,
absolutely.
And today that we still hold them in scorn because the only thing we really know about them is what the Jewish media has taught us.
Today, if, you know, with tens of millions of Muslims in France, there's no Charles Martel. The French would rather have a figure who says, okay, let's all sit down and discuss how to integrate. We'll incorporate you into our society. We'll adopt most of your ways and you can mate with our women. If Charles Martel had adopted that attitude, there'd be no France.
There would have been no Europe.
Mm-hmm.
1,200 years ago, there would have been no Europe. Associate mm-hmm. yourselves and in pieces you'll be broken. Our people just never accepted the warning.
Instead, when the Muslims came marching into France, he rallied his men and said, get yourselves into shape, we're going to war. Here there can be no bargaining, because the danger that threatens Europe is acute. Overnight, it might break in among the civilized nations of the world and spread universal catastrophe. Those states that make peace with it will soon learn from experience that it is not they who will tame Bolshevism, but that Bolshevism will bring them under its heel.
And we see that today in the United States. With the passage of this health bill alone, and with this Negro president, the last two Jewish administrations alone should be far more proof than anybody should need to understand the truth of Goebbels' words here.
Absolutely. You can't make peace with Satan.
Well, we made leagues with Satan, and now we've become Satan. Our entire nation is ruled by Satan.
Well, if the devil comes up to you and offers to shake your hand, while you're shaking his hand, he's sticking a dagger into your ribs with the other hand. It happens all the time. It cannot be said that the Comintern has changed its practices. It is and remains what it always was, the propagandist and revolutionary machinery which is avowedly intended to bring about the downfall of the West. Well, weren't we told that how can light and darkness coexist? How can good and evil agree? What concord hath Christ with Belial?
Well,
Paul told us that good and evil cannot live side by side.
We don't understand. As a people, we don't understand our downfall. We don't understand the freedom that our great-great-great-grandparents had.
And
before the graduated income tax. Before these oppressive property taxes.
We can't simply call it free enterprise versus socialism. It's literally good versus evil, right versus wrong.
Well, right, but we're being deprived of just about everything we earn.
Mm-hmm.
Through oppressive taxes.
And inflation.
Inflation and through these insane banking practices that are allowed to go on in this country.
Well, I think it was Lenin who said something along the lines of place the bourgeois on the anvil of taxation and smash them with the hammer of inflation.
Right.
He said inflation and taxation were the two greatest weapons to use against the bourgeoisie.
Even at the pinnacle of the Second World War, the highest tax rate was only... The average tax load was about 20% of a person's income.
And today it's what, 45?
The tax load's incredible.
Absolutely. And
we are a Marxist nation. Well, we are clearly a Marxist nation.
If I came up to you at gunpoint and said that you have to work 3 hours a day for me or else you're going to prison, that's essentially enslavement, isn't it? How many ways can you slice it?
We are slaves, and we believe we're free. That's a perfect game for Satan. That's a perfect game for the Jews.
Well, he's tricked us into thinking we're righteous when we're wicked, apostate sinners, and he's tricked us into thinking we're free when we're slaves.
And people think they're free because they have no idea of how their great-great-grandparents had it in this country.
Exactly.
And what real free enterprise was.
We're slaves. It just so happens that the shackles and chains are very long. We've been given a fair amount of slack, but we've been given enough to hang ourselves with. which is another thing. Lenin said that the capitalists would sell the rope from which they will hang. And we've basically done that, haven't we? We constructed this system. We built the system that enslaved us. White
well,
men
we
built
allowed the Jews to build this system that enslaved
us. You know, I mean, white men built Hollywood and then sold it to the Jews.
Yes, they did.
It used to be owned by men like D.W. Griffith and Thomas Edison.
Yes, it was. And they actually stole Edison's moving camera invention. They never paid him the royalties for using that.
They've turned all of our inventions against us. The printing press, the camera, the television, the radio. They're using our intellectual creativity to destroy us, since they could have never come up with those inventions, not in 1,000 years.
And now they've moved them all to China.
And that's theft as well.
To make it even worse. Because the Chinese could have never come up with them in 1,000,000 years either.
I would call that Grand Theft Nation, wouldn't you?
That's what it is.
They've stolen our nation.
That's Grand Theft
Identity and Grand Theft Nation.
The marvels of capitalism.
All right. Bolshevism is the declared enemy of all nations and of all religions and of all human civilization. The world revolution is now, as always, its acknowledged and proclaimed goal. Stalin himself has said, as the organ of the War Commissariat, the Red Star, in January 1935, triumphantly announced, "Under Lenin's banner and the proletarian revolution, we shall triumph over the whole world," end quote. Now, can you show me a quote where Hitler said, "Today we rule Germany, tomorrow the world"?
Never.
The Jews attribute that to him, though. I've seen false translations given of his speeches, but he's not saying, "Today we rule Germany, tomorrow the world," since my German's poor, but I would know those words. And the communist emigrant, Piek, said at the 7th World Congress of the Comintern, held on the 28th July this year, "The triumph of socialism in Soviet Russia proves at the same time that the triumph of socialism throughout the whole world is inevitable." And that's exactly what Lenin and Trotsky thought, which is why they were fine with handing over probably a third of Western Russia and the Ukraine to Germany in World War I at the Treaty of Brest-Litovsk, since Lenin and Trotsky both said that the revolution was going to erupt all across Western Europe spontaneously, and it wouldn't matter what land they'd given to Germany, since borders would soon be irrelevant.
Well, and they've become irrelevant. They have absolutely become irrelevant. Look at the 20 million so-called illegal alien Mexicans in this.
Oh, I think it's 50.
Well, it might be 50, but tell me the border means something.
It exists on a map, nowhere else.
That's it. They've destroyed the borders, you know, with the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
All the Scandinavian states are basically pure socialist states for at least 60 years now.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure exactly when it happened, but I mean, in some of those states, there's 90% income taxes.
But just remember that we need to keep 30,000 soldiers on the border of North Korea and South Korea while we keep zero on our own border.
Right. It's incredible. We still have tens of thousands of soldiers in Germany.
Germany's an occupied power.
Yes, it is. Soldiers and air bases all over.
They're there, one, because a lot of them are black and they're there to defile German women and pollute their wombs. Two, they're there in case the Germans ever get their act together and rally around a nationalist. That's what I think they're there for.
If the Germans ever rally around a nationalist, he's a nationalist ecstasy dealer. I think Germany's about most of Europe, it seems to me, is toast.
Mm-hmm.
If there's anybody standing up with any sense, I don't see it. I mean, it's incredible, the state of our people.
Absolutely. On the day before the Congress was held, La Humanité, the organ of the French communists, greeted it with the outburst, "Long live the Comintern, the general staff of the world revolution," end quote. Traffic with Bolshevism is not possible either on a political basis or on the basis of general principles in life. The acknowledgement of the Soviet Union on the part of the United States has given rise to an increase in communist propaganda, innumerable strikes and general unrest throughout America. That's how the Soviets repaid America for recognizing them as a government. I think we should have just said that the Politburo, the Central Committee, were usurpers and that they were not the rightful government of the Russian Empire.
Well, we should have never recognized them. But that was the Red Roosevelt that did that, wasn't it?
I believe, wasn't it Wilson? He extended immediate recognition to them, didn't he?
I don't know. I don't think so.
All right. The military pact between France and the Soviet Union led shortly afterwards to an increase of communist votes at the municipal elections, in which they won 43 mandates and thus doubled the number of mandates formerly held by them, while all the other parties lost accordingly. And at the time, the French president was the Jew, Léon Blum. Am I correct? In the mid-30s, France...
Yes, Léon Blum, the Jew, was the prime minister of France in the mid-30s.
He was a moderate conservative type, wasn't he?
And he was basically bore a lot of the responsibility for the for the Second World War because he refused to relent on a lot of the Versailles Treaty platform, on much of the Versailles Treaty plank platform. He wouldn't relinquish any of the parts of the Versailles Treaty. And had a he had an alliance with Russia, but that was natural for a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
He had a defense alliance with Russia.
To box Germany in.
Yes.
The military alliance between Czechoslovakia and the Soviet Union led to sabotaging in the army and to an unexpected increase of communist votes at the elections which followed. Whoever has made pacts with Bolshevism will have reason to rue his act. Nothing could be farther from our minds than the wish to prescribe for other nations and their governments or even to counsel them. We do not mix up in their domestic affairs. We only see the dangers that threaten Europe, and we raise our voices in warning so that the magnitude of those dangers may be recognized. And I think this is in fulfillment of scriptural prophecy in Isaiah 58:1 to cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet. So here's what Germany's doing. They said National Socialism was not for export, while the Soviets said the world revolution will spread and we're going to take over the globe. So who's the threat to world peace? I mean, an objective measure of the facts, free from the taint of the Jewish media, will reveal that Germany was a stabilizing factor in Europe, countering the spread of the communist revolution. But that's why the U.S. had to go over there to make the world safe for Jewry.
In 1933, the United States recognized the Soviet Union.
Okay. So that would have been
Roosevelt. That was Franklin Roosevelt's first year in office.
That was probably his first act.
If it wasn't his first, it was surely his second. I don't know.
He's sworn in, and he orders them to recognize the Soviet Union and start seizing gold. As far as we ourselves are concerned, we have completely overcome this menace. Indeed, perhaps, outside of his work in Germany, the greatest service which our Führer has rendered the world is that here in Germany he has set up a barrier against world Bolshevism against which the waves of this vile Asiatic Jewish flood break in vain. He has taught us not only to recognize Bolshevism as the world's greatest enemy, but also to meet it face to face and crush it. Instead of this teaching, he has supplied a new and better and nobler idea for the liberation of a whole nation. In the sign of this idea, we have fought our battles and brought our banners to victory. This ideal has enabled us to free Germany from the menace of Bolshevism and banish it once and for all from the German nation. Today we know how to cope with these insidious forces. The nation has been rendered immune against the poison of the Red Anarchy. It has repudiated the false and hollow catchwords of the communistic world propaganda. Seriously and industriously, and with patience and discipline, it has given itself to the solution of problems which arise out of its own destiny. History will one day give due credit to the Führer for having saved Germany from the most acute and deadly peril by overthrowing Bolshevism and thereby saving the whole civilization of the West from the abyss that yawned before it.
Now, and that's the way then, the Germans actually saw it.
And since then, Europe's been thrown into that abyss.
Yes, it has.
Or more accurately, it jumped willingly into that abyss.
Yes, it did.
You know, it seems to me that Hitler was treated like all the great prophets. He came, the people knew him not, and they did whatever they wished with him.
Well, right. Just like Isaiah and John the Baptist, and they just killed him. Right. Exactly. That's the way I see it. Adolf Hitler knew. He knew, and I'm about to show from, we have one more paragraph here, but I'm about to show from Mein Kampf that Hitler knew that global capitalism and global Marxism were heading, you know, dragging the world down the same path.
Absolutely.
To a borderless society run by the Jew.
A one-world government under Satan.
That's what it is.
I hope that it will not be left to posterity to recognize the greatness of this historic mission, but that it will be acknowledged by our contemporaries and that they will decide to act upon the truth of its teachings. As the true and loyal old guard of the Führer and the party, we rejoice that we are standing under his banners in this most decisive struggle that the history of the world has experienced. And I think here it's sad that, you know, I'm not sure if Goebbels realized that this is a continuation of a 6,000-year-old struggle. It's not necessarily the most decisive struggle. This has been ongoing since the Garden of Eden. In fact, this has been ongoing since Satan rose up in heaven.
Well, we showed for the most part that Hitler did understand that, at least
Hitler did.
He understood, and it's in Mein Kampf, and the first weeks that we did this series in Hitler and Christianity, we demonstrated that he knew that the sin of the Adam in the Bible was the Aryan man transgressing through race mixing.
Absolutely.
He understood that. He saw the Jew as the serpent. He didn't put it with the serpent of Genesis 3, but he saw the Jew as the serpent and as an infiltrator and corrupter of Aryan society for the last 6,000 years.
There's no doubt in my mind if Hitler had several hours with you, Comte and or Swift, he'd be a dual seedline preacher in no time.
Oh, I believe so. He was 90% of the way there on his own, just having read the Bible. I can't imagine where he got some of the things that he said from, except through his own examination of Scripture. Because I don't know if anybody wrote some of the things that he reveals in Mein Kampf. I don't know if anybody wrote those things before he did.
And it's absolutely
at least since the time of John the Apostle and Paul of Tarsus.
Depressing and disheartening that he rose up, raised high the banner, and expected the nations of the world, the white nations anyway, to rally to it to stop Asiatic Jewish Bolshevism. And instead, they rallied to the Jewish banner to destroy Germany and subjugate the world for the Jew.
Yes, we did. And I don't think that I think that his fatal mistake is not realizing that water may not be thicker than blood, but money certainly is.
Mm-hmm.
And how easily the Americans and the British were lured by the capitalist Jew into destroying Nazi Germany.
I didn't think he could conceive of the possibility of Britons and Americans going to war to secure the world for communism. I think
that's what happened.
Americans were patriots.
I don't think he conceived of the possibility of the Anglo-Saxon people siding with Joseph Stalin and the Jewish Bolsheviks, the most ruthless murderers in world history.
Cousins killing cousins at the behest of the Jew. But you said that this goes back in the scripture where, Benjamin almost wiped out Dan?
Yes, it is. It's very much like that. Benjamin was almost destroyed totally as a tribe for defending the sons of Belial, which basically means people of mixed race.
And Belial means worthless, of no value.
No, actually Belial means mixed. It's used to denote something worthless because it means mixed.
Okay.
It's very clear in Strong's Concordance. Strong defines it as worthless. Your Bible commentaries define Belial as meaning worthless, but none of them tell us why.
Hmm.
Well, if you go back, there's an entire group of words, one of them being Belial, and several other related words, which mean mixed.
Mm-hmm. And
if something's worthless, there has to be a reason for it.
Absolutely. In Deuteronomy, it talks about sons of Belial. Well, that doesn't mean sons of worthless. Worthless isn't a person. And they have to be worthless for a reason. They have to have qualities that make them worthless or lack qualities that would give them worth.
And the word clearly means mixed.
Absolutely.
And it's used as mixed several times. It's translated that way in the King James. All right, I have some quotes from Mein Kampf. And my point here is to show, first, well, we have seen the German fear of Bolshevism taking over Europe. We've seen that in two speeches from Joseph Goebbels. And a lot of passages in Mein Kampf reflect that same thing. But Adolf Hitler also knew that this was all a tool of Jewish global capitalism. And I have several passages from Mein Kampf that I would like to read to elucidate that. The first one is from pages 102 and 103. And I'm quoting Mein Kampf. Marxism, whose final objective was and still is, and will continue to be, the destruction of all non-Jewish national states. And let me say that that's the same ideal that we see with globalism today. Had to witness in those days of July 1914 how the German working classes, which it had been inveigling, were aroused by the national spirit and rapidly ranged themselves on the side of the fatherland. So we see a nationalist revival in the working German. The only correlation I have today is the Reagan Democrats. Yeah, you know, the working class Democrats that loved Reagan for all of his nationalist rhetoric.
It was just rhetoric, though.
Well, yes, it was just rhetoric. Within a few days, the deceptive smokescreen of that infamous national betrayal had vanished into thin air, and the Jewish bosses, the factory owners, suddenly found themselves alone and deserted. It was as if not a vestige had been left of that folly and madness with which the masses of the German people had been inoculated for 60 years. And that 60 years is from the time of the 1848 revolutions, I would think. Socialist revolutions. That was indeed an evil day for the betrayers of German labor. The moment, however, that the leaders realized the danger which threatened them, they pulled the magic cap of deceit over their ears. The leaders of the socialist uprisings he's talking about. And without being identified, they played the part of mimes in the national reawakening. And this is there's a strong correlation to what's going on today with these Tea Party movements, because they've been co-opted by neocon Jews.
Absolutely. An article just came out on, I think, the Ohio Plain Dealer NewsNet 5 about militias in Ohio either actively being formed by Jews or recruiting Jews, and they talked about how one Jew joined a militia in Geauga County, and then at the end of it, it gets to the part where he says that it wasn't for him, and he wanted to join the real Citizens Defense Force, so he's now part of the Ohio State Guard, or the National Guard, and that he's part of a sanctioned movement rather than a shady underground outfit. So either they're there to discredit militias, or they're there to co-opt them and take them over. But the genuine militias, like the one up in Michigan, Indiana, and Ohio, the Houtre, they get raided and shut down by provocateurs.
Well, they also allow themselves to be infiltrated and led by the nose, so...
Mm-hmm.
The time seemed to have arrived for proceeding against the whole Jewish gang of public pests. He's talking about during World War I. Then it was that action should have been taken regardless of any consequent whining or protestation. At one stroke, in the August of 1914, all the empty nonsense about international solidarity, which is Marxist workers' propaganda, was knocked out of the heads of the German working classes. A few weeks later, instead of this stupid talk sounding in their ears, they heard the noise of American-manufactured shrapnel bursting above the heads of the marching columns as a symbol of international comradeship. In other words, Hitler's being cynical, right?
Absolutely.
Now that the German worker had rediscovered the road to nationhood, it ought to have been the duty of any government which had the care of its own people in its keeping to take this opportunity of mercilessly rooting out everything that was opposed to the national spirit. In other words, out with the parasites. Hitler said that you know, there was a great surge of nationalism in Germany in 1914, and basically that's when they should have got rid of the Jews. While the flower of the nation's manhood was dying at the front, there was time enough at home at least to exterminate this vermin. But instead of doing so, His Majesty the Kaiser held out his hands to these hoary criminals, thus assuring them his protection and allowing them to regain their mental composure. And so the viper could begin his work again, this time, however, more carefully than before, but still more destructively. While honest people dreamt of reconciliation, these perjured criminals were making preparations for a revolution. And so we see that the post-war Marxist revolutions in Germany, and they were backed by the class of industrialists, the Jewish industrialists, the Jewish businessmen that Hitler's talking about here. He makes that very clear in Mein Kampf. Page 105. Generally speaking, one should guard against considering the broad masses more stupid than they really are. In political matters, it frequently happens that feeling judges more correctly than intellect. But the opinion that this feeling on the part of the masses is sufficient proof of their stupid international attitude can be immediately and definitely refuted by the simple fact that pacifist democracy is no less fatuous, though it draws its supporters almost exclusively from bourgeois circles, as long as millions of citizens daily gulp down what the social democratic press, or the Jewish press, tells them. So this is an old problem, right? It ill becomes the masters to joke at the expense of the comrades, for in the long run they all swallow the same hash, even though it be dished up with different spices. In both cases, the cook is one and the same, the Jew. In other words, Hitler knew that pacifist democracy was a setup by the Jew press to allow the advance of Marxism in Europe. And today it allows the same, the advance of globalism here, and it has for 30 years.
Under the guise of free trade.
Absolutely. Mein Kampf, page 216, and we'll get into free trade here too. Mein Kampf, page 216. It is evident that such a general sketch of the ideas implied in the folk concept of the world may easily be interpreted in a thousand different ways. As a matter of fact, there is scarcely one of our recent political movements that does not refer at some point to this conception of the world. But the fact that this conception of the world still maintains its independent existence in the face of all the others proves that their ways of looking at life are quite different from this. Meaning the Jew hasn't grasped the folk concept of the world. Thus, the Marxist conception, directed by a central organization endowed with supreme authority, is opposed by a motley crew of opinions, which is not very impressive in face of the solid phalanx presented by the enemy. That this describes the very totalitarian organization of a strong central government that the founders of this nation also resisted.
Well, that's why they're bashed. Isn't that why the Jews incessantly bashed them? Because they tried to set up a system that would prevent them from coming to power.
Well, right. And, you know, the Federalist Papers are promoted incessantly in academia. But you hardly hear anything of the Anti-Federalist Papers.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a collection of Anti-Federalist Papers, the writings of all the men against the strong federal government.
We never much hear about the Articles of Confederation.
No, we don't hear much about them at all.
Never hear about Washington and Jefferson.
Okay, to continue with Hitler, victory cannot be achieved with such weak weapons, meaning the Democratic parties as they were then, only when the international idea politically organized by Marxism. So Hitler consistently draws the parallel between internationalism and Marxism, which is a very fair parallel. And that's exactly what we have today in global capitalism. They just gave it a different name. But it's the Jew on both ends of the stick. Only when the international idea politically organized by Marxism is confronted by the folk idea, equally well organized in a systematic way and equally well led, only then will the fighting energy in the one camp be able to meet that of the other on an equal footing, and victory will be found on the side of eternal truth, meaning with the folk idea, with the today we would call it the racist idea, right?
Well, the Jews would call it that, since they've demonized it.
Well, absolutely. And that's what Hitler considers the folk idea, is that each race of people should have control of its own destiny.
And historically, that just came natural to people. They didn't need to be taught that. They just knew it. But the Jew is working overtime to teach people contrary to it.
To continue to quote, "But a general conception of life can never be given an organic embodiment until it is precisely and definitely formulated. The function which dogma fulfills in religious belief is parallel to the function which party principles fulfill for a political party, which is in the process of being built up. Therefore, for the conception of life that is based on the folk idea, it is necessary that an instrument be forged which can be used in fighting for this ideal, similar to the Marxist party organization, which clears the way for internationalism. And this is the aim which the German nationalist socialist labor movement, or the Nazi party, pursues." So we see that Hitler's policies were entirely ethnocentric, while Marxism seeks to destroy national distinctions. And Hitler was entirely aware of that. his defense, well, was for the German race. There's no doubt. And it, he doesn't ever call it the, I mean, he talks about the German ingenuity as compared to the Slavic, and he debases the Slavs, and he, yeah, you know, promotes Germanism as opposed to Slavism. But that's, you know, those ideas are for the defense. Without the idea that your race is special, there's no defense against race mixing. There's no defense against alien encroachments.
Well, if all races are the same and we all came out of Africa and we all have common ancestors, then we're all heading in the same direction. We might as well just mix right now.
Right. But he never spoke about a race of supreme, superior, blonde-headed, blue-eyed people. I don't see it anywhere, except in Jewish propaganda. Mein Kampf, pages 89 and 91. The chatter about the peaceful conquest of the world by commercial means. Now let me say this. I saw this personally. Now, this philosophy that Hitler is denigrating right here. I saw this personally in the pages of the Wall Street Journal. They spout this nonsense for decades. They still spout this nonsense. Okay? The chatter about the peaceful conquest of the world by commercial means was probably the most completely nonsensical stuff ever raised to the dignity of a guiding principle in the policy of a state. This nonsense became even more foolish when England was pointed out as a typical example to prove how the thing could be put into practice. Our doctrinal way of regarding history and our professorial ideas in that domain have done irreparable harm and offer a striking proof of how people, quote unquote, learn history without understanding any of it. As a matter of fact, England ought to have been looked upon as a convincing argument against the theory of Pacific conquest of the world by commercial means. No nation prepared the way for its commercial conquests more brutally than England did by means of the sword. And no other nation has defended such conquests more ruthlessly. Is it not a characteristic quality of British statecraft that it knows how to use political power in order to gain economic advantages, and inversely, to turn economic conquests into political power? What an astounding error it was to believe that England would not have the courage to give its own blood for the purposes of its own economic expansion. The fact that England did not possess a national army proved nothing, for it is not the actual military structure of the moment that matters, but rather the will and determination to use whatever military strength is available. England has always had the armament which she needed. She always fought with those weapons which were necessary for success. She sent mercenary troops to fight as long as mercenaries sufficed, but she never hesitated to draw heavily and deeply from the best blood of the whole nation when victory could be obtained only by such sacrifice. And in every case, the fighting spirit, dogged determination, and use of brutal means in conducting military operations have always remained the same. And I would personally say that England's biggest crime is that this was often at the expense of her Dutch, German, and even French racial kinsmen. But yeah, you know, it's been a major propaganda device of Jewish capitalism for many years now, and this is what Hitler's talking about, that we could bring peace to the world through open borders and free trade and spreading our technology all over the place.
Well, all we've done is send our jobs overseas and bring the people over here.
Exactly. That's exactly, it's open borders and free trade. While the Jew spouts world peace through those means, we've had nothing but destruction for our race.
Well, they say peace where there is no peace.
And Hitler was standing against that. He was standing against those Jewish concepts.
He knew they were all hypocrites and liars because he'd read the Bible.
Well, absolutely.
He'd done what most Christians have never done. He actually read the book.
And he foresaw the destruction of the German people through that means. And 60 years later, we know he was right. 80 years later, we know he was right. Because we see the results.
Well, I think a year later, everyone should have known he was right when the Allies handed over half of the world to Stalin.
Well, absolutely true. But in Germany, through the medium of the schools, the press, and the comic papers, an idea of the Englishman was gradually formed, which was bound eventually to lead to the worst kind of self-deception. This absurdity slowly but persistently spread into every quarter of German life. The result was an undervaluation for which we have had to pay a heavy penalty. The delusion was so profound that the Englishman was looked upon as a shrewd businessman. I think that these German papers and comic papers actually were portraying the English Jew. That's what I think. The Englishman was looked upon as a shrewd businessman, but personally a coward, even to an incredible degree. Unfortunately, our lofty teachers of professorial history did not bring home to the minds of their pupils the truth that it is not possible to build up such a mighty organization as the British Empire by mere swindle and fraud. The few who... it was Jewish swindle and fraud and English blood. That's how they built the empire.
Isn't that how they built up the American Empire?
Absolutely. The few who called attention to that truth were either ignored or silenced. I can vividly recall to mind the astonished looks of my comrades when they found themselves personally face-to-face for the first time with the Tommies in Flanders. After a few days of fighting, the consciousness slowly dawned on our soldiers that those Scotsmen were not like the ones we had seen described and caricatured in the comic papers and mentioned in the communiques. It was then that I formed my first ideas of the efficiency of various forms of propaganda. Such a falsification, however, served the purpose of those who fabricated it. This caricature of the Englishman, though false, could be used to prove the possibility of conquering the world peacefully by commercial means. Where the Englishman succeeded, we should also succeed. In other words, they were always portraying the Jewish businessmen in Hong Kong, but they were never showing you the 50,000 English soldiers fighting to let the Jewish businessmen into Hong Kong, right? Where the Englishman succeeded, we should also succeed. Our far greater honesty and our freedom from that, specifically English perfidy, would be assets on our side. Thereby, it was hoped that the sympathy of the smaller nations and the confidence of the greater nations could be gained more easily. We did not realize that our honesty was an object of profound aversion for other people because we ourselves believed in it. The rest of the world looked on our behavior as a manifestation of a shrewd deceitfulness, but when the revolution came, then they were amazed at the deeper insight it gave them into our mentality, sincere even beyond the limits of stupidity. And the lesson here is that the picture that is drawn of the English businessman, and yet people do not realize or they quickly forget the sacrifice in blood that it took to force, for England to force all those alien nations into globalism and world trade. And today we think that these alien nations, well, we're still fooled by this same thing. And it's going to work out to our punishment in the end.
There's nothing new under the sun. It's the deception that goes back to the garden.
Well, absolutely. But Hitler was defeated, and the deception is still in the world. And that's the point I'm trying to make.
Because he thought he could separate the wheat from the tares, and only Christ can do that.
Right. I have one more quote, Mein Kampf, page 136. Before the war, of the internationalization of the German economic structure had already begun by a roundabout share way of share issues. In other words, a free and open stock market forces the internationalization of a country's economic structure. It is true that a section of the German industrialists made a determined attempt to avert the danger. But in the end, they gave way before the united attacks of money-grabbing capitalism, which was assisted in this fight by its faithful henchmen in the Marxist movement. The persistent war against German heavy industries was the visible start of the internationalization of German economic life as envisaged by the Marxists. This, however, could only be brought to a successful conclusion by the victory which Marxism was able to gain in the revolution. As I write these words, Success is attending the general attack on the German state railways, which are now to be turned over to international capitalists. The international social democracy has once again attained one of its main objectives. And here Hitler illustrates the cooperation between Marxists and capitalists. And we see the same exact thing happen here in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, where the unions, with their Marxist principles, with their communist principles, were used to make life impossible for American corporations, which facilitated the destruction of American industry with so-called competition from third world slave drones.
And it seems odd that the unions would support open borders and free trade when that basically means that their jobs are gone.
Well, right. The unions are basically just tools for the international Marxists and capitalists working hand in hand to destroy American industry. It's a Jew revolution, and it's the slow road. It's the slow road to hell instead of the fast road that they took in 1 year in Bolshevik, you know, when they introduced Bolshevism to Russia.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And Hitler understood all of this. Hitler understood that the capitalists and the Marxists were working together to destroy the West. And they still are. Except now they're just about there.
Well, we never had a Hitler figure in this country, so the process is basically continuing unabated.
Absolutely. There is no doubt. And we have prostrated ourselves before the international Jew in the name of peace, when there is no peace.
You have any final thoughts?
They are my final thoughts. We've demonstrated the threat that Bolshevism was to Germany. We've demonstrated that the Germans feared that and stood against that threat.
Rightly so.
And we've demonstrated that the American and British people were corralled into destroying Christian Germany for the Jew that wanted to destroy it.
So, in the name of saving the world, we've damned the world.
Yes, we have. There is no doubt.
That's really all I can say on it. That sums it up. We set out to make the world safe, and all we've done is make the world a living nightmare.
Yes. And Peace Radio, he's Jewish, and he could go straight to hell with the rest of the Jews. I don't talk to Jews. Just click on him and mute his vile tail. Okay, that's Communism with the Mask Off.
Wait, Peace Radio? Oh, okay, wrong guy. I thought you said mute some. Oh, never mind.
No, not Frenchman.
Oh, okay. All right. Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. Thank you.